We sieged this city, bum, bum. We sieged this city on rock and roll. Sieged this city, bum, bum, bum. We sieged this city, police academy 6. City under siege.
Beautiful, sir, beautiful.
When will they accept my theme tune idea?
What, to retroactively go back and...
I want them to go back and edit every DVD, every VHS, and every Laserdisc, especially the Laserdiscs, Tom.
With your new, totally not infringing on any copyrights theme song. I'm sure we can make that happen. We can go back in time to 1989, the year of Police Academy 6, City Under Siege. That's what we're talking about today, at the bitter end, with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Toddly T, your pal, your mate, your buddy, your friend, Todd Jordan.
He's my guy. What up, guy? Yeah, we're nearly at the end of this
one. We're nearly at the bitter end, right? Mm. 6 Police Academy movies certainly does sound like an awful lot of Police Academy movies.
It does. It also seems like quite intense when you think that this one was made in 1989, a year after the last one. That, like... In the 80s, these came out, like, every year, like clockwork, for 6 years. That is intense.
Well, especially because if you think about it, a lot of actors, big star name actors, can afford to do one big movie a year, really, you know, because they'll get paid a living salary worth for that year. There's so many character actors in this who are a really big part of it. None of them are getting paid that kind of money. So... They're like jobbing actors on the job. Yeah. They're just like, oh, I've got to be Tackleberry again for the 6th year in a row.
But it must be a
also like running my carpentry workshop and like popping up in Star Trek and like doing all of this other stuff.
I mean, that must be like a nice gig to get.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we can't all be Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess that's why you're not getting...
That's why Steve Guttenberg is not back yet.
True.
But from looking in the trailer, which we just watched... Spackler Fackler, he's back.
No sign of his wife. His wife.
But he didn't come back for like...
He didn't get to go to Miami.
Didn't go to Miami because he was holding out for more money.
Yeah.
Spackler's got to pay the bills now.
No sign of House also being there.
No, House was not also there. Doesn't look like there is that other Lasard, like the replacement Goots.
Proctor. Oh, no, the other... Yes, okay, the Lasard's cousin. Yeah, and Harris didn't seem to have Proctor with him either.
I think Proctor might have been.
Okay.
He
didn't get like a shout-out the same way that everybody else did. So we get Lasard, Hooks, Tackleberry, Callahan even gets a shout-out, which is rare for her.
Yeah, Winslow, obviously. So this trailer just kind of washed over me in a bit. Like, it opened up with like a nice kind of like weird like cartoon silhouette of like a villainous gangster, and there's an actual plot in this one, apparently, that there's like a crime lord who's got inside information that's coming from the police force. So someone's crooked. They got to find the rat, right? And you get a, like, cool story. And then the whole trailer was just, like, saying people's names and just a montage of stuff. And so it just kind of, like, washed over me. But also, this is the one where it's like, I remember this one. This is the one that I've seen.
Well, the experience for me of watching this trailer was, dare I say, Proustian. It was the floodgates of memory came back. So I've said... All through the season, I didn't know which ones I'd seen and which ones I hadn't. This was one that I was fairly certain I hadn't seen. Turns out I fucking have. Not only have I seen it, it's apparently the one with the scenes that really lodged themselves in my childhood brain, which I had not attached to Police Academy. I didn't realise that that's where they were. In the trailer, we see Tackleberry shooting a gun at a wall and writing, "Have a nice day" in bullet holes.
Yeah.
I remember that so clearly. I remember thinking that was the coolest fucking thing in the world. I thought, as a child, I would have been 6 when this came out, by the way. My memory of that is that was actually from a serious film. I remember thinking this as a kid. Because this is something that definitely happened to me as a kid a lot. I would watch wacky comedies and not realise they were supposed to be comedies and just be like, yes, this is how grown-ups behave. So I remember that, but I'm thinking that it was like quite a serious crime film. And I also remember the other bit from the trailer that really jogs my memory, was fucking Michael Winslow doing cyborg sound effects. He's basically pretending to be the Terminator. He's got like a bit of metal on his chest. And
I remember that as well, seeing that.
And I remember finding that scene quite scary as a child.
Really?
Yeah, because I was a fucking wimp.
Okay.
So I've had this really like emotional...
Yeah,
floodgates have been pulled back to the past by fucking Michael Winslow.
I know. Like I felt like that as well. I didn't like those scenes hadn't like stuck in my head, but like as soon as I saw them, I was like, oh fuck, I've seen this. The only thing I remembered about this film is that like there is like a crime boss story and there's a monster truck chase at the end of the film. We got a glimpse of a monster truck. I'm actually like, you know, I've been a bit rough on this franchise a little bit, you know, but like I'm quite excited about watching this one.
It's got some promise.
I want to see how it stands up. Like, I think I probably quite liked Michael Winslow's robot thing when I was a child, so I'm quite looking forward to seeing, like, whether I still like, whether, like, Winslow in film six is going to, like, pull something out the bag that we're going to like, or, once again, I'm going to have to go back in time and tell young Tom that he's a fucking idiot.
Do you know what? If Winslow somehow manages to get a chuckle out of me tonight, I am going to be the first person to admit it. I'm giving him a fair shake, right? No grudges here.
Okay, well, impress us, Winslow. So we should go and watch this. We should see if Winslow and the gang can impress us. But before we do, let's find out how impressed the people of IMDb have been by this film. Todd, are you ready to play the guessing game?
Not yet. Hang on. Okay, now I'm ready.
Okay, good. So this is Police Academy 6, City Under Siege from 1989. Assignment Miami Beach, the year previous, got a 4.4.
Which seems unfair. I enjoyed it.
Maybe the people who were watching it were like drinking pina coladas at the time and they were just like, oh God. It's just like by association, they were just kind of like, oh, fuck this. But I, you know, like the trailer for this, like it was kind of like a bit, it was quite a generic Police Academy trailer, but there's a lot of memories that has been stirred up in us. So what do you think this is going to get?
Okay, so I've said before how I have a theory that once a franchise goes below a 5, it can never get above a 5 again. I do think that this one is going to be more popular than Assignment Miami Beach. I don't think by much, because I'm not a fool.
Wise.
So I think there's going to be a rise of 0.1. I'm saying 4.5.
I'm sorry, mate. It's a 4.1.
Whoa!
This franchise, it started going down. And it has stayed down. It just keeps on just like just slowly trickling.
I got some fucking high hopes for Mission to Moscow, the actual bitter end of the franchise.
Well, we'll see next week, won't we? But that's a problem for future Todd and Tom.
Fuck those guys.
Those guys are a right bunch of dickheads. Let's just go and enjoy City Under Siege.
Whammy!
Siege, me baby, till I lose control.
Okay. Nice.
Tom, what do you think? Did Michael Winslow pull it out of the bag?
Did Michael Winslow pull it out of the bag? We've been hard on him, and I'll give him a fair crack, and I'll say that this was the most entertaining he has been. There's like one scene in it, which is like Michael Winslow's best scene in the whole franchise. Still didn't really laugh, but fair play to you, sir. Just keep on swinging every... There was also just a weird point where I was just kind of like, what the fuck? Like the most like, what the fuck is Michael Winslow doing point as well.
And we will get to that. But first, I'm going to drop a massive bombshell on
you. Oh, okay, yeah.
Right, so get in the duck and cover position.
Okay.
This is my favourite one so far.
Is it?
Yeah. I liked it quite a lot.
I enjoyed it as well. It's a very different beast to the first one, because this one is like... This one's just like a film. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, it's so legit. You looked at the trivia and told me that this one isn't filmed in Canada. It's actually filmed in a little town called L.A., and it's fucking dripping off the screen, the like LA-ness of this. Like everyone's got like actual actor makeup on.
It just looks
lit.
Yeah, it looks loads better. There's like dramatic lighting. It's like some really like, you know, like nice like camera, you know, like nice shots. Like not like the greatest film ever, but within the context of Police Academy, this is the best looking film that they've done.
Clearly, and within the context of Police Academy, I mean, this dialogue in this is virtually Quentin Tarantino-esque. Like, yeah. It flows and is paced and you understand what people are talking about.
It's actually, they have a plot and they are driving the plot forward at, like, you know, like, from the beginning to the end. There's no kind of, like, kick about of gags for an hour and then something happens randomly. It's, like, set up at the beginning and, like, they're on a journey. They're on a mission. And I enjoyed it. Like, yeah. It's not as funny. I'm not saying it's not as funny because there are some bits in it that did make me chuckle. It's just not thick and fast with gags.
No, but the funnies that we get are all the funnier. Now, Tom, are you aware of the gentleman that directed this film?
No, who did?
Well, nobody of fame or huge note, you know, a jobbing director as far as I'm aware. But he's got a special name that leapt out to me, which I think might have bled into where the kind of the increased funniness is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's name is Peter Boners. And do you want to know how he spells his surname?
How does he spell it?
B-O-N-E-R-Z.
Boners.
Peter Boners.
Oh.
His name's Pete Boners, and I cannot let that go. I will not let that go.
And was that just what was making you chuckle throughout the film? It's like whole
almost
time you're
constantly.
you're just like Boners.
If your name's Pete Boners, you know funny.
Speaking of funny, the film opens, right? You got the classic Police Academy skyline at the beginning, and then we've got you know, like the typical kind of like slightly more downbeat opening. We've got Harris and Proctor are back and they're on a stakeout.
And with the proper movie lighting, you can see them all the more clearly. Proctor looks like he's aged about 10 years in the 1 year since the previous film came out. Yeah. Just because he's well lit for the first time.
You've got this big sweeping crane shot zooming in on the car and it's like Proctor is in the car and he's singing...
It's Christmas songs.
Yeah, he's like, on the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gift. He's singing that. And it's like, so like, it's got this whole like Christmas song. You're like, is this a Christmas film? Is this set at Christmas? And then it like pans up and you see like Proctor just singing away like the lovable man child that he is. And Harris is just kind of like, oh, he's not having it. And he's like, Proctor, it's Christmas is in 5 months' time. If you do not shut up, I'm going to shoot you. And I was like, straight in. That got a chuckle out of me.
Oh, you got a chuckle out of me, but it's getting a chuckle out of me just hearing you retell the thing that I saw and chuckled at earlier.
Yeah. I mean, like Proctor starts humming. Harris, like, pulls his coat back and is like, I've got my gun. So they are on this, crucially, they're on this stakeout that the city had been ravaged with crime. I mean, the city was kind of ravaged by crime in every film. Like, the Police Academy recruits, despite being the best, never seem to solve the problem, do they? They're like just like bailing water out of a ship. They can never solve it.
It's a new gang. They're called the Wilson Heights Gang.
Mm.
And they always seem to be one step ahead of the cops.
But how? Exactly.
There's three of them. There's a bloke with a beard whose whole thing is that he's just really strong. There is a guy who's an acrobat. He does a lot of like backflips.
A lot of tumbling.
And then there's a guy who looks a bit like the man that played Father Ted, who's just kind of his thing is he's the leader.
He's got some guns.
He likes practical jokes.
He's a sharpshooter. So they're the gang. They're the ones that, like, that Harris is trying to pin down. We get the little bit of backstory that Harris is now no longer working at the Police Academy. He's finally running his own precinct. He's happy to be away from Lassard. And then what happened, like, that they bungle the stakeout. They're one step ahead. They can't catch him. So Harris gets called in to the mayor, and it's not the Lady Mayor.
It's a dude mare playing...
Bro mare.
Bro mare. And Bro mare is a massive lad. He's played by Kenny Mars, who you might recognise from some Mel Brooks movies. He was in The Producers, played the Nazi screenwriter in that. He's also in Young Frankenstein, who's the guy with like the knife and the fake hand. Really, really great comic actor.
He's great.
Chewing up the scenery.
He's the my medal of honour for this. Like, I think that... It was really nice to have a new, you know, like somebody new, but someone strong. Like the Police Academy movies, you get new people that come and go, and like, but House also, no. You know, these people come and they do nothing, but then you got like this guy with like a real comedy pedigree, like big Kenny Mars, and he just smashes it.
He's got one joke, which, by the way, wasn't in the script. He improvised it throughout, which is just that he keeps forgetting the really simple words for things. So he's like, we're going to have to go down there and catch these criminals so that we can bring them to, you know, the opposite of crime, that one, justice.
Yeah.
That's his joke. He does it all the time, and he improvised it. What a massive lad.
Massive lad. And this massive lad, he's saying, like, Harris, we're going to bring in a special task force of other top lads to nip this crime in the bud, yeah?
Because they suspect that there is a mole in Harris's team. So he's like, we're bringing in an external team.
Yes, yes.
To sort of, to sidestep the mole. And Harris is like, well, who's heading up the external team? Who could it be? I don't understand. It could be. There's so many policemen.
Could be some new characters.
There's so many possible options. Like there's.
It's Lasard. I can't even be.
It's Lasard. There's this brilliant line where the mayor goes, "I'm sure you know Lasard," and it's like dun dun dun, and he just pops in, and Lasard is a year older. A year more mental.
Yeah.
And he's got this huge smile on his face because he's so lovable. He is delighted to see Harris, like their old mate and not enemies. He's just like, Harris, how are you? Hello. I would give you a goldfish, but that's apparently not one of my character traits anymore.
Yeah,
hello.
We've forgotten about that. We're just going really with dementia now. And he brings in all the gang. Almost all the gang and some returns. So it's like we said, like from the trailer, you've got Hightower,
yep.
Hooks,
yep.
Callahan,
yep.
Tackleberry, yep. Winslow. Nick Lasard is back. Fake Goots is back. I've got no ties in Miami.
Yeah.
I'm very unpopular there. In fact, I should probably get out of the state.
He had to leave the whole state.
So he's there being like the fake Goots.
And then
Spackler Fackler's back. Fuck me, he gets a lot of screen time.
No mention of why he wasn't in the last film. The only thing that they do to even remotely address it is he just turns up to work. Spackler Fackler, he's the guy whose thing is that he's really clumsy. Turns up to work, he's walking in the door, he keeps accidentally knocking people over and causing chaos everywhere he goes. He looks around and he goes, it's good to be back.
Yeah.
But where were you, though? They don't address it.
No, I assume he was just like... nearly killing people with like his kind of clumsiness. Him being back is quite weird because he was always a very sort of like B, C list character. Like he would have like maybe two scenes of him doing something a bit stupid.
Yeah.
Like something clumsy. Obviously he started the Apple Riot.
But it's a core role. It's a core role, Tom. Oh. Come on.
God damn it. He's back, but they've given so much screen time to him. Michael Winslow only goes biddly boop in like the first half of the film. It's only until like much later on that he actually gets anything to do. I think that maybe he was just like, I've got shit going on. Where Spackler Fackler's like, I'll do it. I'll do whatever. I don't know if he's not my favourite character. Because he seems so detached from the gang. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really feel like, you know, for better or worse, whatever you think about these characters, like they've got this really strong bond. They all love each other. They all look out for each other. Whereas like Fackler's always seemed like an outsider. He's always on the periphery because he's too oblivious to everything. He's too like busy starting Apple riots and blowing up like fireworks are lying around in the precinct and doing all this kind of shit to ever really connect with people.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, kind of that some of the more regular characters have had a little bit of development since we've seen them last.
Yeah.
So we see a little bit more of Tackleberry's home life. None of his wife, we don't get that. But there's a bit where he wakes up in the middle of the night, thinks he hears a noise, he's sneaking around, he's got his gun out. In the hall, he bumps into his son.
Tack Jr.
Tack Jr., who seems to be like maybe 8 or 9 years old, something like that, has his own gun. Now, don't remember, it was only a few movies ago where Tackleberry said the line, "Mahoney, I'm a virgin," right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was in the second film, I think, yep. Right? So that was 5 films ago.
And then when did Mrs. Tackleberry appear in...
Mrs. Tackleberry, well, that was the one where they were
Insisted
first dating.
On Patrol.
It was the end...
She came back.
That was when she came back. And she wasn't pregnant then, right? So within 3 movies, which have been released a year apart each,
yep,
he has apparently developed a 9-year-old son.
Well, I think that there's a definite, despite the fact that these films are coming out one a year, the time difference between them is not right, because there's a bit where Harris says to Mr. Mayor, it's like, "I would hope that you could serve for a third term." Now, the Lady Mayor, we saw her in the second film. And like, how long is a mayoral term?
That's true. I don't know.
I don't know if it's like you get to do it. I don't know how long it works. Do you do it for a year? Or is it a bit longer?
I don't know, but this is a super interesting area of discussion.
What's been going on?
mayoral terms procedure.
But there's unaccounted for time in the Police Academy universe. That's what I'm saying.
I agree with you. And this thing with the sun, there's only a couple of explanations I can think of. One is that he had a son from a previous relationship.
He's a virgin.
Which was consummated through artificial insemination.
Okay.
Because Tackleberry is such a fucking psychopath. He's like, "No way am I taking my trousers off. I'm not doing that."
Okay, yeah.
Right. Or,
yeah,
I think this one's much more plausible, it's just a boy he's kidnapped and forcing at gunpoint to call him dad.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, we could go with that then.
Yeah, I think it's probably that.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Cool. Any other updates?
Yeah, the only other little update is we get a little bit of Hooks out on the beat, yep, and she's trying to write up a parking ticket for a guy called Wendell P. Farnsworth.
Good name.
Who's, he's just a bell end, and he's trying to throw his weight around and be like, "No, I'm friends with the police commissioner and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to fuck you up." All of this stuff. He throws the ticket and she walks away. Wendell P. Farnsworth thinks that he's won, and she comes back with all these other tickets. And she's just badass now. She's like not squeaky Hooks so much anymore. And she's like gives him all these tickets, reads him everything, and then says,
"What's this? Citations for parking in a red zone, parking more than 18 inches from the curb, blocking a fire hydrant, expired registration sticker, no front plate, littering, attempt to extort an officer of the court, and willfully destroying a court summons."
"Oh no, my car!
You can pick it up at the police impound yard after you pay for your citation.
Boy!"
And it's amazing.
Yeah, it was a good Hooks moment.
And that's it. I think we're up to speed.
Yeah, everyone else is just kind of doing their own thing, the usual biz. What's the name of the gang?
The Wilson Heights gang.
The Wilson Heights gang. The team find out that like maybe they are... they're not operating on their own. They're hired guns. And so then this introduces the mastermind, who appears to the Wilson Heights gang in a wall, like behind frosted glass as a silhouette, smoking a cigar, wearing a hat, and talks to them in this like weird, distorted voice and gives them instructions.
Instructions for the plan that he likes to call Operation Chaos.
We've got a proper villain in this. Like, no sexy grandpa that's like introduced, like, you know, like at the very end of the film. There's no like gangster Woody Allen. I've been really outdone by the bad guy in City Under Siege. This is so embarrassing. No, we've got like a proper villain. And it really changes the tone of the film.
Yeah.
Like, there's like, because there's comedy in it, but there's like more kind of like action and drama and shit.
Yeah. And intrigue. You know, we're like, who is Mr. Big going to be? Who is the man behind the frosted glass?
Yeah.
Who is it going to be? And the gang want to find this out as well. Our gang of lovable police sergeants, etc. So there's a really cool scene where they go out in the community to like ask some questions. Because Lasard is like, go find out the word on the street. And so there's a really good bit where Hooks and Hightower go to a rap concert, an open-air rap concert.
Yes. The rapper is Melly Mel, like, who did, like, The Message and, like, you know, like, well-respected early hip-hop pioneer. He doesn't come off particularly well.
He's apparently a worse rapper than Hooks.
Yeah, there's a very awkward bit. Like, he's rapping, and then, like, Hooks comes up and raps to him to try and, like, ask him, like, hey, do you know what's going on with this gang?
Because that's the way to get the kids' attention.
I know. But then when, like, Melly Mel and his hype man reply, they go off the beat so much. Like, it's really awkward. It's quite... it's a bit unsettling.
Your beat's cutting, Robin. The right to left. Your rap was hard, and you said real death. But we need some help.
She's a rapper and a cop.
Man, everybody's rapping. Now where would it stop?
People trying to get rap. A whole lot of beef.
But now only folks are rapping without no teeth.
We're rapping about gangs that go around banging,
robbing, stealing, shooting, and hanging on corners, polluting the nature. So give me your number in case we get some information.
Word. We believe you guys, so we won't dispute you. But if you're lying to us, we'll come back and shoot you. Word.
I just think they weren't really... They were kind of maybe phoning it in on that
I
day.
I think so. I think they were probably like, yeah, where's my fucking money? yeah, so that was a weird little scene.
There's another little bit of people trying to get the word on the street where Tackleberry is pretending to be a cab driver. And, you know, he's just sort of there to, like, get the vibe. And a guy gets into the back of the cab. And Tackleberry's like, it's not a real cab, mate. Fuck off. And the guy's like, hey, I'm getting the cab. You got to take me where I want to go. And he's like, Tackleberry gets a grenade out with his finger on the pin. And he's like, you need to go and get the bus now. And so the guy like gets out and runs away. But I have a question for you, Tom, as a Tackleberry fan. Do you think if that guy hadn't have left the cab, Tackleberry would have willingly killed them both?
I don't know. I think that he probably would have like thrown the grenade in and then just like walked out. Although, I don't know. Maybe
I think
he would have
just
himself.
Held on to it and just gone down in flames on his principles.
He spends a lot of time in this film fondling a grenade. Maybe everything is not right at home because he knows that like Tack Jr. isn't really his. Because he's kind of like, but we first had... I'm so confused.
But in Citizens on Patrol, when Lasard asked everybody what the worst thing about being on the force was, Tackleberry said the fact that they weren't allowed to carry grenades.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now he's doing it. So
he's
did
gone
he,
rogue.
Or did he get that policy change?
Maybe he did. He just, like, really like lobbied for it hard. There's a lot of like instances where like the gang are trying to like... catch the bad guys, but they get thwarted. In amongst this, I just want to say, there was like a little gag bit that I really liked with Harris.
Okay,
that didn't start off good, but then got better and better as it went on.
Well, lay it on me, brother.
So there's a lot of chair gags with Harris in this, where like Hightower keeps on breaking the chair, so like Harris will sit on the chair and it'll get broken or whatever. And they put super glue on his chair. And he sits down and then, like, gets called into the mayor's office and he's got this chair glued to his ass. And he just kind of gets something like, that's not funny. These chair gags are doing nothing for me. But it follows. And you see Harris walking with Proctor down this long hallway. And anytime somebody jumps out or, like, you know, comes out of a door or comes around a corner, he has to quickly sit down and, like, just, like, launch into conversation with Proctor. He's like, oh, yes, we need to do something about this sprinkler system. And, like, and he's like, oh, he just walks down. And then a load of foreign dignitaries come in. He's like, oh, my God, yes, yes. Oh, welcome to America. What a wonderful country. And then he goes into the mayor's office, has this conversation with the mayor, and the mayor's like, go get him, Harris. And he runs out with his chair on his ass, and the mayor just picks up the phone and goes, Debbie, can you find out why Harris has a chair stuck to his ass? Yes.
Top notch.
I was into that.
Yeah, really good.
That was like, it was like the Mrs. Spackler fact on the bonnet of the car. Didn't start out funny, but they stuck with it. And yeah. I liked it.
I like Peter Boner's directorial stick-to-itiveness.
Yes, it was good, good stuff.
There's also another quite good Harris moment. Well, it's more of a Proctor moment, I must admit.
Okay.
During this whole bit where they're getting the word on the street, where Harris and Proctor pose as window cleaners on this big skyscraper.
Yes.
To try and find out some information about the gang, the Wilson Heights gang. They don't realise that what they're actually listening in on is the office of an A&R scout for a record label. And yeah. They are discussing a band called The Gang. And they've got this record they're passing to each other, and it's this like hip rock band called The Gang. And they're like, so where are The Gang based? You know, when can we go and meet The Gang? Where are The Gang gonna be operating next? And all of this stuff. And they're listening in. Proctor accidentally knocks Harris off their like window cleaning rig that's on the side of the skyscraper, and he's hanging there. Harris is hanging, he grabs onto Proctor's trouser leg, which rips the trousers, revealing he's got these super cool banana boxer shorts.
Nice.
But then the whole trousers fall away, and they're like falling, like floating through the air down by the skyscraper. Harris is like clinging on by one finger to the rig, and Proctor goes, Harris, don't worry about the pants. Save yourself.
That's a good line.
I just thought that was a good line. Like, he thought that, like, Harris was going to just, like, leap off the building to go after the pants.
I feel like there's not as many gags in this film. But I think maybe because it's more, there's actual more story and, like, narrative to it that, like, the jokes kind of, like, mesh in a little bit more with what's actually going on rather than just being like, here are some skits, we'll see what works. I liked it. So then what, like, oh yeah, the mastermind, the shadowy figure, he's planning Operation Chaos.
Yeah, totally.
And he implements it just as the gang are starting to figure out what's going on.
The first thing they notice is that it's a series of robberies all along the same route as the old number 51 bus line.
Which is also going to be the new, like, crosstown railway.
My God, what could it mean, Dom?
Well, it's basically all to do with property.
Just like every old Western where the villains are trying to run out the nice family farm because of the railways coming
so
through.
So they can buy up all the land. And
that's what this is. He wants robberies in the neighbourhood to drop the property prices so he can buy it up cheap and then raise the prices when the railway comes through.
Yeah.
But who is it? Who is the man behind the mask?
Well, we'll find out shortly, won't we? But not before Operation Chaos kicks off. So after all this kind of like this debacle with all these robberies, the mastermind's goons basically blow up the power grid. So you get like this, you get a blackout, you get looting and rioting. So the guys have got to take to the streets. They've got to restore order. And one of the weirdest scenes that happens in this, which is the very confusing Winslow scene that we mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Is where Winslow and fake Gutenberg go to Comedy Pub.
It's just called Comedy Pub, and everybody is furious because there can't be any stand-up comedy there because there's no electricity.
There's no microphone.
There's no microphone.
But obviously, Winslow has, like, his little microphone thing attached to him. And so his way of, like, maintaining order is to just go in and do a set.
Yeah.
It's weird because Winslow has done fuck all so far. Like, he's done very, very little. And then the bit, like, he just does a bit of his stand-up.
And it's like, poor.
Yeah.
It's quite poor. It's some voices. It's some funny voices.
He does a Donald Duck voice.
He does a very strange Jimi Hendrix impression.
Bizarre. And that's the bulk of it, is this weird as fuck Jimi Hendrix impression.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Metropolitan Police Department proudly presents me.
My name is the man with a better plan. You better behave yourselves while you can. Because I'm the electric police Jimmy Man. Thank you very much.
Kills as well.
Everyone's having a great time.
Whereas we are here in 2017 just being like, what
fuck are you on about, mate?
And it really takes you out of the film where it's like, you know, like he's obviously works as a stand-up, but that, you know, like that they finally put in a bit in these films, six films in, where he can just go, is there a bit where I can just do my fucking stand-up? Like I don't want to be a fucking policeman. Can I just do my set? And it's kind of like, yeah, it's like, I've got this brilliant Jimi Hendrix bit. There's no jokes in it, but everyone's going to find it hilarious. Fuck, it was weird, man.
It was weird, yeah. It was hell of weird. And unfortunately, during all of this time, the baddies frame Lasard.
Yes.
Lasard the Elder, they put some jewels in his locker. And there's this big unveiling where Harris is like, we've searched the lockers and we've found that the stolen jewels are in the locker of Commandant Lasard.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the mayor is like, I am shocked. And there's a good line where Lasard goes, you're shocked. I like it.
That was good.
And then they all get really upset in like a super low-level acting way. Like Callahan, just like barely reading the words off the page, says, this isn't right. A man's been falsely accused.
When do I get paid?
And then somebody else says, Lasard is the reason we've got these jobs. And I don't know if that's true, is it? I mean, yes, he was working at the police academy back in the first film when some of them were training, but not Callahan, for example. She was a teacher there.
She already had the job. Maybe he gave. Well, not, I think that, you know, he's like, he's the reason we've got these jobs, because they know that his mind is not all that. And they've just been, and they know that they're not particularly good policemen, but they've just managed to ingratiate themselves with this lovable, befuddled old man. And they're like, fuck, if he goes, that's our meal ticket.
True, yeah, because anyone else would have hauled them out on their ass, man.
Yeah, be like, excuse me, you're meant to be restoring order at Comedy Pub, not doing a baffling Jimi Hendrix impression.
So push comes to shove, and then, as always happens, shove also comes to push. And what happens is the baddie, Mr. Big, is kind of locked down into a chase where he's driving a cherry picker.
Well, there's also... before that...
Yeah.
We get the confrontation between the gang and the police academy gang, where they're all kind of like evenly matched. So we've got so the strong guy fights Hightower, the gun guy fights Tackleberry, and the tumbler guy fights Jones. And this is where like a lot of those scenes were that we remembered flooding back from our youth.
Yes, so do you want to talk through each of those fights?
The fight with Hightower is just kind of a fight. It's not, it's just two men having a bit of a grapple. It's not particularly dramatic or exciting. But like the Jones thing, this is the bit which is like the best thing Winslow has done in this series. And it's him doing his bullshit kung fu thing again for like the fifth time in six films. But they've actually like, it's just because the film is so much more like well made and like shot so much better. It's really dark and atmospheric. They're doing some wire work with like these kung fu kicks and stuff like that. And then he turns himself into a robot, where you're kind of like, a new bit. It's a new bit.
It's a new bit. And this is the thing that apparently really lodged in my brain from when I was a kid. So the baddie kind of throws Winslow over this kind of box thing. And he's lying there and he finds these pieces of broken machinery and he like stuffs them in his jumper to make it look like he's got wires and stuff coming out. And he's got this claw hand. And he walks out and he's doing these, like, I've got to say, credit to Winslow for it.
Mm.
Quite convincing, like, hydraulic sound effects. He's like...
Yeah.
Like he's a Terminator.
Target human. Mission destroy.
My God, you're a robot.
My God, you're a robot. My God, you're a robot.
Please don't kill me.
Yeah, and what I'll say, like, it's not funny, but like really, but it's entertaining.
It's definitely
an entertain. It's like the best that Winslow has been.
I'm watching it back. I don't know why. I mean, I definitely would have seen this film before I saw Terminator, for example, and I definitely. Definitely, as a kid seeing this, would have not gotten that he was only pretending. And I would have thought, I think I remember this. Oh my God, he was a robot all along.
That explains so much.
Yeah, and I think it really freaked me the fuck out, man.
Okay, well, yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And then we've got Tack having his gun showdown with the gun guy, which is where he shoots.
Have a nice day,
and that's about it. But like these bits, they it's just a very different kind of ending. Like it's very like, I don't know if I want to say like character driven, but it's actually giving these characters some fucking shit to do.
Yeah, man, which is long overdue. Once again, Peter Boners, I love your work.
You've been bonered, son. So yeah, then after this, it comes to the chase that you were about to mention.
The big chase. Yes, it comes to the chase, which is Mr. Big, the sort of the evil villain who's not yet been unmasked. He gets in a cherry picker. Fake Gutenberg, Nick Lassard, is in the like top bit, you know, the basket. Yeah, and he's like going, whoa, whoa, while this cherry picker's like driving through the streets. Everybody's chasing. And he's going to Commissioner Hurst's office. Hurst is the guy who went Johnson's. They all had Johnson's.
Well, crucially though, what are they chasing him in?
Oh, it's a monster truck.
Yeah, motherfucker. It's a monster truck. Harris and Proctor steal a bus. They chase him in that. Again, I'd say best chase out of just because it, again, it's cinematic. It's like it's a lot more fun to watch than
it's well edited.
The other things were just a bit of a mess. There's no jokes in it, but it's still kind of fun.
It's just a
fucking monster truck.
Hightower's got this monster truck, which you told me, Tom, is a famous monster truck or something, right?
It's Bigfoot, which I think is like quite was a famous monster truck in the 80s because it was the 80s.
It's mental, the idea of there being one famous monster truck, right? One truck. It's not just, oh, it's a monster truck. Oh, it's this one.
Yeah, this one.
And the thing that makes it different is it's just got the word Bigfoot written on the side of it.
Yeah, and maybe it was just bigger than all the others. I don't know. Anywho... They chase him down to the commissioner's office.
Yes, and when they get there, they're running into the office and Commissioner Hurst is sat there. Oh my God.
And he's like, what are you doing in my office?
And they're like, well, we just chased the villain, Mr. Big, just ran in here like literally 10 seconds before you ran in here. And he's like, well, he's not here now, so you'll have to get out. And then as they're turning to leave...
Who should come in?
Commissioner Hurst.
But if you... And you're here.
Whoa! But the thing is, this is such a dumb equation because, okay, it's not like, well, which one could it be? Because one of them was literally behind you.
Yeah.
You weren't chasing the one that came in after the other one.
So it turns out the one that was in front of them is not Hurst.
He's wearing a disguise and he's got this latex mask and there's a really horrifying bit
where
they pull his nose off and his whole face collapses, and it's like pretty full on.
Yeah, and who is it?
It's Kenny Mars, the mayor, the most famous actor in the films.
Knew I should have voted for the lady mayor to come in for another term.
Boo. And it's him, and he's fucking crazy.
Mental.
He starts going like full Daffy Duck, just like, yeah. Like doing all this crazy shit. And he's like, it was a money-making scheme. Put the worst commandant I could think of on the job because I wanted to get away with it. By the way, the leak in the department was Harris because he told me everything that was going on. Harris, your big bell end.
Yeah. While this is all being revealed, Lassard just starts to fall asleep standing up.
It's a really subtle gag. They don't really even address it that much, but it's just like that last little bit where he's like, I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you meddling kids. Like where he's just explaining everything he did. They just cut to Lassard. He falls asleep, like standing up and then like kind of jerks back to attention. He's not all there.
He's definitely not all there. And then it wouldn't be a Police Academy film without some sort of ceremony at the end. So they get given some medals. That's it. They attach some balloons to Harris's chair. He floats off. We assume he dies. The end.
He would freeze to death.
Yeah.
Well, Peter Boners, love your work, mate.
I agree. This is one of my favourite films. I think, like, this and the first one, I don't think it deserves that low score.
How is this one lower rated than Assignment Miami Beach? Now, I quite enjoyed Assignment Miami Beach.
Yeah, but it was shit, wasn't it?
I mean, it was like, my kind of shit.
Yeah.
But this one is better than that.
Yeah, this one's like, it's actually a film. I mean, like, you know, I mean, Woody Allen was fun, wasn't he? But
yeah.
And House was also there, but this is just, yeah, this is way better.
I was really hoping that there would be like an after credits scene where like the credits had finished and then just House walked along and was like, hey guys, I've just been sitting in this chair in this room the whole time. Has anything interesting happened? Because I was also there.
Yeah. Or he's just kind of like, wow, guys, another crazy adventure, eh? Great. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed that more than like a lot of these movies. So well done, Mr. Boners.
Well done, Mr. Boners. And if you are one of the rare breed of listeners we have that watch these movies along with us, I would really like to know what you thought of this movie.
Yeah.
So if you've seen any of the others and also this one, if you think it's a stinking piece of shit, if you thought it was a right romp, get in touch. Drop us a line.
We want to know. And now this brings us to like we're on the precipice of finishing this thing.
Yes, so, we are on Bitter End Eve because next we meet, we will be watching the final movie in the franchise, Police Academy 7: Mission to Moscow.
Yeah. I don't know really very much about it other than the obvious that it's in Russia. This one is not like coming like a year after. I think there was like about 5-year gap.
So I saw it at the cinema when it came out. It's the only one of these that I have. I went for a friend's birthday when I was a small schoolboy and I remember really, really liking it at the time. And I know that it's got Christopher Lee in it.
Sick.
Second Bitter End outing for Christoph Lee, who long-time listeners will remember showed up in The Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf.
I'd be interested to see
season 3
which one he looks more dead behind the eyes in. That's going to be interesting. And also, I believe, a little Mr. Ron Perlman,
a.k.a. Hellboy and Clay Morrow from Sons of Anarchy. He's in it too.
Sick.
I can't wait to hear him do like a fake Russian accent, which I can only assume he's going to do.
Yeah.
I can't. See, this is the thing. I remember that I went to go see it. I can only remember one scene and it's not a joke scene. I just remember this one like really serious, like little bit of exposition. I can't remember anything else from the film. So
I'm also interested to see who is back
from the gang.
Yeah.
Last man standing.
Yeah. Because as far as I'm aware, isn't it like who are the ones that we know are definitely like in every film? I think like Winslow is Tack.
Yeah.
And Lassard.
I don't know if Lassard is in it.
Oh, maybe not Lassard. Because I don't know. You know, like, will we get Will Hooks be in it?
I don't think Hooks is in it, buddy.
Like, who's going to be in it?
I know that Tack will.
I think Harris is in it.
Okay, yeah.
I think we'll have Harris as the
foil.
They're
going to have to introduce a bunch more characters.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Fackler might come back. They're apparently loving Spackler Fackler now.
Oh, yes, that's true. And also, big, big question. This film, I think, was made in, like, 93, 94. How 90s is this motherfucker going to be?
Well, it's going to be Russia 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know what that would be like. Damn. I mean, we had that amazing skateboarding scene in 4, so...
That's all you need.
It's fine. That was the birth of the 90s.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you will return next week to reach the bitter end of the Police Academy franchise with us. Until then, I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Bitter End Pod or Facebook at Bitter End Pod.
Drop us a line, say hi, and we'll see you next time. Wrap up tight. There's no pina coladas where we're going. We're going to Moscow.
До свидания, comrade.
Da.